Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mona Montgomery with this evening's edition of The Hula Hoax. There were no gas chambers. There was no pure Jew fat soap. There were no Jew skin lampshades, and there were no Mengelian experiments. What there were concentration camps, because Hitler had decided that the Jewish Bolsheviks, who were in the process in Russia of crucifying, torturing, and killing 65 million white Christian Russians, needed to be put in cages.
Are you familiar with the theory that Akhenaten is the same person as Moses? It's an interesting theory, and it proves that one more time the Jews have attempted to take over a country, in this case, ancient Egypt, only to get their little butts kicked out of it, under very similar situations that Hitler kicked them out of Germany. It's a fascinating theory. It really is. The idea that Moses is Akhenaten, it's absolutely earth-shaking. Moses is the king of the Jews who took all the Egyptians out of Egypt into Israel, right? And we think of him as being a wonderful leader of men. Akhenaten was an Egyptian pharaoh, and we think of him as being an important man. Both of them were born in the same area. Both of them lived during the same time. But when you look at the history of Moses and the history of Akhenaten in terms of their family tree, you see a very unfortunate mongrelization that took place, starting with Joseph, the man of many colors, the man who brought the Israelis over to Egypt at the beginning of the sojourn. He was the man who is famous for having the coat of many colors, which was given to him by his father, Jacob, / Israel. That's how far back we're going now into Israeli mythology. Jacob Israel was the father of all of the Israelite houses. And he had a son, Joseph, to whom he gave a coat of many colors, which made his brothers so jealous of him that they sold Joseph into slavery in Egypt. Most of you know that story. What you don't know is that Joseph, the Jew, was a filthy kike who convinced Pharaoh to cheat the Egyptians by hoarding the grain for 7 years while he, Joseph, allowed the water over which he had total control to go through the Nile River and water all of the grain fields. Then Joseph convinced the Pharaoh to let him stop the water going into the grain fields, which caused a horrible famine, and then Joseph showed the Pharaoh that he could make a lot of money by selling the grain to the now starving Egyptians for 100 times its actual value. That was the nature of this kike Joseph, the man with the coat of many colors. One of the things Joseph did was Joseph married into the house of the Akhenatens, or the Amenhoteps, the Egyptian kings. He married an Egyptian princess. He had a child named Tyre, who was a female, a daughter. She was half Jewish. She also married into the Egyptian line and gave birth to Moses, also known as Akhenaten, who was one quarter Jewish. That one quarter, however, was enough to get Akhenaten / Moses kicked out of the whole area where the kings in Egypt lived because they didn't like mongrels. They hated mongrels. So this mongrel, Akhenaten / Moses, was brought up by his Jewish relatives. Naturally, you want to know what happened to poor Moses after he got thrown away from the line of Egyptian kings and was forced to be brought up as a Jew, since he was one quarter Jewish. He learned the religion of the Jews. Don't you see? He was brought up by his Jewish relatives who taught him that Yahweh, the demon god to whom the Jews offered sacrifices, was the only god who should be worshipped. So while he was co-reigning with his father Amenhotep the fourth, Amenhotep the third, Akhenaten, who was Amenhotep the fourth, also known as Moses, which means son of, Mose means son, that was sort of his nickname, he caused trouble for the Egyptian aristocracy and monarchy and pharaocracy, whatever you call them, by introducing this hideous satanic god known as Yahweh. And when he finally became the main pharaoh, because his father died after about 30 years of having co-ruled Egypt with him, he forced the Egyptians to take their beloved pets, whom they'd loved and worshipped. They, being basically white people, naturally these pharaohs loved their dogs and cats and birds just as white people do today. But this hideous one-quarter Jew mongrel Akhenaten forced them to build statues like Judenstein that we've seen for the last 2,000 years, on which European children have been sacrificed. Joseph made the Egyptians follow the Jewish religion and bring in their cats and their dogs and their birds and kill them in the sadistic satanic manner of the Jew known as kosher killing, which involves cutting the neck in half and bleeding the animal dry of all of his blood while he is still alive. It's a death by torture, which the Jews believe please their God. Well, the Egyptians took just about 9 years of this before they threatened to kill Akhenaten, because they really were completely disgusted by his depraved religion, the Jewish religion, the religion of Yahweh, the God of blood. So he fled. Akhenaten fled into Israel, where he lived for 30 years, during which time the Jews, who were practicing the Satan worship in the very enlightened city of Egypt, well, the country of Egypt, they were oppressed. They suddenly came under oppression because the Egyptians realized what the Jews were doing to them. They had allowed them to flourish for 7 years while they put all of the grain into granaries, and then they diverted the water away from the fields for 7 more years and bankrupt the Egyptian economy, just as they're doing to America today. So when the Egyptians woke up to this deceit, they took all of the Jews who had wiggled their way up into the Egyptian aristocracy and power structure and forced them to live in a certain city where they were reduced to becoming mere laborers. The Egyptians would not put up with the Jews anymore because they discovered how deceitful and corrupt they were. So after 30 years in exile, Akhenaten, also known as Moses, came back from Israel, collected up the Jews and a bunch of Egyptians, and took them back over to Israel in the story that you know of as Moses rescuing the Jews from the Egyptians. The introduction of the Jewish blood from Joseph, the man with the coat of many colors, was what brought down the 18th dynasty, the Amenhoteps, because having race mixed into the Egyptian dynasty, the Egyptian line then became polluted with Jewish blood, so that in the third generation, the reigning monarch who was in line to be the next pharaoh, Amenhotep IV, also known as Akhenaten, came to his position with one-quarter Jewish blood and introduced in his monarchy the Jewish concept of Satan worship, which was enough to get the Egyptians so angry at the entire dynasty that they drove this Amenhotep IV right out of Egypt, and that was the end of the 18th dynasty, which began the 19th dynasty, known as the Ramses dynasty. It was this dynasty, the Ramses dynasty, that drove the Jews out of Egypt finally, and with them terminated the entire 18th dynasty. Thus you see how dangerous it is to commit the crime of race mixing in the upper reaches of society. We may be seeing the end of a dynasty right here in America right now, if this dynasty of the Bushes falls and a whole new power structure gets put in. It will be for the same reason that the power structure of the 18th dynasty fell in Egypt. We allowed the Jew to introduce his filthy doctrines in the form of radical right-wing Christianity, which isn't Christianity at all, and has been offending intelligent white Christians for about 45 years with its proposal that every piece of disorganized cells that attaches itself to any female's womb, whether she be white or black, a victim of incest or rape or whatever, a hideous mongoloid monster, has to be brought to term, totally destroying the white Christian bloodline. It is apostasy. It is not what the Christian believes. It never has been. This is a foolish Christian doctrine imposed on white people to destroy the white people's bloodline. And it was introduced into our society in about 1965, when all of the churches gave way to the Pope's decree that human life was sacred, and from now on, intelligent upper-class white people could not control the destinies of their families with the use of birth control or abortion. Now we're seeing a second-generation heretic in office following the dictates of this hideous Satan-worshipping Jewish religion, and if things go along as they did in Egypt, the white power structure is going to rebel against the introduction of homosexuality, illegitimacy, tearing down the Ten Commandments, making God unwelcome in our court system, etc., etc. As the majority of white people realize they've been taken for a ride by this heretic group of radical religious whites who have married themselves with Jews, there may be a driving out of America of this entire dynasty, just as it happened when the ancient Egyptians terminated the reign of the 18th dynasty, brought in the 19th dynasty. We may be seeing in America the end of this Reagan-Bush dynasty, and a whole new dynasty may be put in place. What we're seeing in America is what the Egyptians saw when this mongrel, this Moses character, this Akhenaten, who was one quarter Jewish, tried to force the Egyptians, the good, sophisticated, pyramid-building, white pharaoh Egyptians, that everyone should worship at the altar of Satan. They took it as long as they could, and then they drove the entire dynasty out of Egypt. That's what's going to happen if Bush continues to try to convince the good Christian American people that we need to bow down and worship at the Jewish God. The majority is going to figure it out, and they're going to drive Bush and his entire dynasty out of America. The Jews in Egypt didn't even have laws except these strange Noahide laws that included a prohibition against eating an animal while he was still alive. You're not supposed to take a dog's leg and eat on it until the dog is dead. It's a no-no under Noahide laws. It was a big breakthrough for them to realize that it was not a very nice thing to hack off a dog's leg and eat it while the poor dog still needed it to run around with. That's your Jewish law. It was the Egyptians that developed the Ten Commandments and furnished the inspiration for the Psalms that were improperly attributed to David the psalmist. This was all Egyptian law, drafted by white people centuries before the Jews ever ran into the white people. Remember, white people have been running around in their human form for 200,000 years. It's the white people that know that God is love, and that the same God that loves one man loves another, because like the sun, God shines equally on all of us. This is the white man's understanding. The Jews have no understanding of law and order. They're absolutely primitive. The Jews have been kicked out of 90 countries. I've only studied one, and that's Egypt. But after studying the way the Egyptians kicked the Jews out during the reign of Akhenaten, I have great faith that we Americans can kick the Jews out, although it will cost us a dynasty. Because that's how the Jews operate. They move into a country, they ally themselves with the ruling dynasty, they corrupt the ruling dynasty, and the only way to get rid of them is to start a new dynasty. But not as it's not as hard of a job as it sounds like, because the new dynasty that gets created is really the old dynasty before it got corrupted by the Jew. So actually, it's normalcy taking place. It just looks like the end of a dynasty because it's the end of the Jew-controlled dynasty. All we have to do is go back to our old religion, our old traditions, and throw off this new strange anomaly that calls itself Christianity, but isn't. Most importantly, of course, we have to put up our Christmas trees and our creches and our crosses, but it won't be a great big theocracy, because before the Jew moved in with civil rights, nobody cared so much about the Christmas tree and the creche and the cross on Easter. We weren't a fanatical people. We were a people that had a way of living, and it involved going to church and meeting each other and wearing pretty dresses and smiling and having flirtations. The religion was so much more in the background than it is today, where every Christian has to be a fanatic. I'm not talking about when they were burning witches 400 years ago or 300 years ago. That was the Jews that did that stuff. Remember, it was the Jews that wrote the Malleus Maleficarum, which taught Catholic priests how to torture witches to death for committing the crime of creating involuntary erections on the part of men. Okay, this is insanity. I'm talking about 50 years ago, when life was normal in the 50s. And people, there was no crime. Everybody had their doors open, because we were all white. Everybody was white. Everybody played according to the rules. And it worked brilliantly. It was wonderful. We need to go back to our old way of thinking things, the way the Founding Fathers thought, that people are supposed to take personal responsibility, that women are not supposed to be whores. They're supposed to be able to enjoy who they are and be loved for who they are, not what hideous things they can do to destroy their integrity to please some perverted man who's under the spell of Jewish perversion. It's all gotten crazy. And all we have to do is make it go back to being normal. In other words, we have to overthrow this Jew-controlled Bush-Reagan dynasty and put in regular, normal white folks, and we can go back to being human again. How do we develop the new dynasty in America that's going to overthrow the Jew-corrupt dynasty that's in place right now? I think our best tool is the Internet. I have woken up since 9/11 thanks to the Internet. I've seen the change, the shift in consciousness right here in the Internet, from only one person coming in 2 years ago saying that the white race had the right to survive, and now it's up to about 25%. That shift is going to continue. I think what we need to do is to continue the way we're going, develop more and more awake Americans and Europeans, figure out some way to penetrate the wall between the United States and Germany and get a hold of the German chatters some way or other. And that's how I really think that's how we're going to create the talent that's going to lead the new dynasty in America, which will overthrow the presently controlled Jew dynasty.
Oh, I'm a good old rebel, now that's just what I am. And for this Yankee nation, I do not give a damn. I'm glad I fought again, I only wish we'd won. I ain't asked any pardon for anything I've done. I hate the Yankee nation and everything they do. I hate the Declaration of Independence too. I hate the glorious Union, 'tis dripping with our blood. I hate the striped banner, I fit it all I could. I rode with Robert E. Lee for 3 years thereabout. Got wounded in 4 places and I starved at Point Lookout. I caught the rheumatism, a camping in the snow. But I killed a chance of Yankees and I'd like to kill some more. 300,000 Yankees is stiff in southern dust. We got 300,000 before they conquered us. They died of southern fever and southern steel and shot. I wish there were 3 million instead of what we got. I can't take up my musket and fight 'em now no more. But I ain't gonna love 'em, now that is certain sure. And I don't want no pardon for what I was and am. I won't be reconstructed, and I do not give a damn. Oh, I'm a good old rebel, now that's just what I am. For this Yankee nation, I do not give a damn. I'm glad I fought again, I only wish we'd won. I ain't asked any pardon for anything I've done. I ain't asked any pardon for anything I've done.
One of the ways the Jew controls us is through the oppression of banality. Anyone who says anything more substantive than how's the weather, or kiss my grits, or ha ha ha, let's talk filth, is considered socially incorrect, because the Jew has convinced us that we have to be absolutely pleasant at all times. We're not allowed to think, we're not allowed to question, we're not allowed to criticize. The greatest crime you can commit today is to hate. To hate, to feel an emotion other than worship for our Jewish masters. And that's what has to be fought. This oppression of banality has to be cut through, and people have to assert their right to express their feelings, their opinions, their emotions, whether or not the people around them share those feelings, thoughts, and emotions. We have to change the whole tenor of the party from being banal to being vigorous and alive. This is going to be the face of the new dynasty of America. There will be a vigorous debate. There will be luminous personalities, and they will be developed on the internet. And you'll know them when you see them, because they'll be telling the truth about things. They'll be talking about something other than nothing at all. That will be the new American dynasty. And it won't be that much different from the one that my parents participated in 50, 60 years ago. But it'll have a new tone, because we will have come through the last 60 years of Jew corrupt dynasty, and we will have had that will give us an opportunity to rethink our positions. I maintain, for example, that abortion will be seen as the right and responsible thing to do if the child is not going to be taken care of. I believe, and these are all Hitlerian ideas that I'm espousing, but they are my ideas. I believe that children who are severely handicapped will not be born, because we will understand that it's a very cruel and inhuman thing to do, to condemn a person to a whole life as a hopeless cripple. I'm not positive of what the face of the new dynasty will be, but I know that it will be American. It won't be that much different from what our parents thought, and it will be enough if we continue working, talking, sharing on the internet and in our local communities to create the new American dynasty that has to overthrow our present Jew-controlled dynasty. What's going to happen in this country is what's happened in all of the other 90 countries the Jews have been kicked out of. Congress is going to be taken over by the next American dynasty, who is going to overthrow this Jew-controlled dynasty that's been in power since the 60s. It happens all the time. The Jews go into a country like Joseph went into Egypt in 1300 BC and made friends with the Pharaoh and taught him how to lie, cheat, and steal, married into the Pharaonic dynasty, had a half-breed child who married into the Pharaonic dynasty, who had a child who was a quarter Jew, who practically destroyed Egypt. He introduced this Jewish satanic god. He was not accepted by any of the Egyptians because he had a big hook nose and he was real ugly. And so they had to drive him out after he had destroyed, he and his ancestors, his Jewish ancestors, had destroyed Egypt's economy by playing a trick on the Egyptian people. And all of you who know about the Federal Reserve Bank will get a kick out of this Jewish trick. The Jew told the Egyptian pharaoh, hey, what you got to do is you got to get your people to put all of their extra grain into a granary for 7 years, and we'll build up a great big supply of grain, which we'll buy for just very little money, and then put me in charge of the water, and I'll make sure the water doesn't get to the grain fields, and we can starve the people, and then we can sell for 7 years all this grain for 100 or 1,000 times what it's worth. And the pharaoh felt, I mean, have you ever heard that trick before? Does that surprise anybody? Well, when Egypt's economy fell flat on its face was about the same time this mongrel pharaoh, this Akhenaten, who was also Moses, was driven out of Egypt. He had to escape over there to Israel. All of the Israelis were taken out of their positions of power and forced to live in a ghetto and actually do real labor. So that's what happens. And the dynasty fell. The 18th dynasty fell because the Egyptians realized they had to get rid of the Jew, so they ended the 18th dynasty, they started the 19th dynasty, and things got back to normal. And that's what's going to happen in America. The Jews have had their little dynasty. It's becoming very apparent. Yes, Moses was Akhenaten. It's a fascinating story. Just check it out on Moses and Akhenaten. It's a fabulous book. Anyway, that's what we're doing now. We are waking up to the Jew. We're going to find out that our federal bank is completely bankrupt, and our money is going to become worthless, and we are going to pass another law in Congress when we get our dynasty in power, and nature will take its course. The Jew will be plucked out of power, put into a ghetto, or sent to Israel, and they'll have to go and find a 92nd country to play their little game in. The reason that America is losing its jobs is because affirmative action has made it unprofitable for employers to work, to have their businesses in this country. After 9/11, there was a lot of soul searching done among the stockbrokers, and it was decided we could no longer invest in America because a business no sooner sets itself up and starts hiring people than they're confronted with these affirmative action laws, which set them up for a $1 million lawsuit if any black person can prove that they were not chosen for a job in spite of the fact that they were equally qualified as a white person. So this meant that the employer, who's struggling enough just to manufacture his item and make a profit and feed his family, this meant that this man could no longer choose his employees based on his personal preference. He couldn't just say, I feel comfortable with working with this guy. I'm going to have this guy on my team. I think this guy's going to support me. He was under a mandate, thanks to affirmative action, to choose people based on their race. In other words, he had to choose the black person or risk a $1 million lawsuit. Okay, then let's say he goes ahead and gives up his right to choose his staff based on his personal preference, hires the black person, he is still liable for an affirmative action lawsuit if the black person can prove that the employer does not like him as much as he likes a member of his own race. So no matter how you cut it, the employer is doomed. There can be no creativity in a society where the creators are not entitled to make decisions based on their own personal preferences. It's hard enough being creative without having to divide up your profit based on any criteria other than your personal preference. We've taken the art out of artistry and sent it overseas. I am not concerned with the poor. There are plenty of starving, subhuman people around. They will never go out of business. I am concerned with civilization. I'm concerned with white Western civilization. During World War II, the Americans bombed all of the beautiful German cities with a population of over 100,000, forever destroying Dresden, Berlin, all of these nadirs of white Western civilization. And with the bombings, not only were people killed, but all of the artifacts of our superior white Western civilization were permanently destroyed. You can hardly buy a piece of Dresden china anymore, and yet every woman who runs a household covets this beautiful, beautiful china. It's important to have nice things. It's important to have upper-class art. Lower-class art isn't interesting. You don't want to serve your family on a bunch of bowls carved out of mud and painted with some sloppy, jagged lines. You get no feeling of accomplishment from that. We need our art. We need our classical music, architecture, china, linens. All of these things get lost when you take the position that feeding every cockroach on the planet is what's most important. It is not. What's most important is that civilization reach a higher and higher level. That's the only way we can guarantee the progress of humanity. The last thing you want to worry yourself about is feeding Negroes. The creative people in our society are the employers. After a man has figured out a product to manufacture and has learned to manufacture it and has learned how to sell it, he needs to have people help him. He can't do it all by himself anymore. And that's when he becomes an employer. He casts his net out into the ocean and he picks the best fish he can find. He chooses an employer that he thinks will be loyal, hardworking, supportive, helpful, productive. That's the way it's supposed to be. Now, with affirmative action, employers are not allowed to use their discretionary choice as to who they should put on their teams. So the creative energy is drained out of the employer. He can't do both things. You can't both be creative and worry about other people's civil rights at the same time. He goes and he looks out over the rest of the world and he notices that in India, people are grateful to have jobs. They don't use the workplace as a forum to work out racial strife. They go into work because they want to get paid. Same thing in Japan. Same thing in China. America is the only place where the workplace has been changed from an arena of productivity to become a forum for racial strife. You cannot be creative and be racially fighting at the same time. So rather than subject their creative process to the race war that's going on in America, intelligent employers have gone to other countries where these problems don't exist. Intelligent Americans who know that we are completely in the dark as to who hit us on 9/11 can't put it together that it was Israel. This is amazing. In spite of the fact that Homeland Security was headed by Michael Chertoff, a Jew, who acted in the following manner. First, he gave safe passage home to Israel to three cells of Israeli spies who were spying on America, one of them 200 strong in Northern California. The second thing Michael Chertoff did was stop the investigation into who attacked us on 9/11. He just stopped it. He started up this diversion, this anthrax scare that went on for 10 days, morning, noon, and night. That's the only thing the media concentrated on. And there was no investigation as to who hit us on 9/11. So that's the first two things he did. He gave his own spies, Israeli spies, safe harbor homeward to Israel. He stopped the investigation into who hit us. And he put in jail or had deported from the country high-profile white Americans who were pointing the finger at Israel after 9/11 and said, that's our problem. These include Ernst Zundel, who's been in solitary confinement in Canada for over a year, David Duke, who is in jail, Matt Hale, who is in jail, and the rest of us who have been pointing the finger at Israel and saying, we want an investigation. But the question still goes on. How do we benefit? The intelligent American says. by going to war against Israel's enemies. We would never do that. We can't be under that much control by Israel, but we are. Our entire media has been bought by the Jews. The notable exception, the one goyim who owned CNN, was Ted Turner, and they bought him out in some kind of a little coup that was supposed to allow him to buy himself back in. They would not let him buy back in. Instead, they sold CNN to a Jew at a lesser price than Ted Turner wanted to pay. So now the American media is 100% controlled by Jews. That means nothing comes through that media that doesn't support Israel. Israel cannot fight against Iraq as well as Israel can make us fight against Iraq. You can't understand the full horror of how we've been taken over by the Jewish Bolsheviks until you study communism going all the way back to its inception in 1900, when wealthy American Jews and corporation top heads bought Jekyll Island and invented a means by which to take over America. They invented Zionism, they invented communism. They were just rich people that were going for vacation to this island that they bought to the south of Georgia for the fun of it. They had the money, they had the time, and they had the intelligence, and they wanted to take over the world. Why not? Their plan was, let's get control of the Middle East because oil will be the lifeblood of the next generations. And let's do it by inventing a religion. We'll call it Zionism. That'll impress the Christians. Well, maybe we'd do better to call it communism. And while we're at it, let's sell the American people on the Federal Reserve Bank, which we will head, which will allow us to print out worthless money and charge the American people interest on this money. And they've done that, so that now we are in debt, our children's children are in debt, to these people who own the National Reserve, which is a private corporation owned by international bankers, $7 trillion. Our children are broke for several generations because of this plan that was hatched on Jekyll Island. They assassinated the Tsar and Tsarina. They took over Russia. They were 95% Jewish. Yiddish was the second language of the Communist Party, and they killed 65 million white Christians. Hitler said, halt, do not come into Germany. America fought on the side of the communists, and another 20 million Germans were killed after the Second World War in an ongoing effort to exterminate the white race, because these people who want to turn the world into a totalitarian world order know the white race has to be exterminated because white people will not allow themselves to be enslaved by a totalitarian, communistic form of government. So America's white leadership has absolutely been targeted for destruction. Joe McCarthy came back and reported this to our people, told us that the show trials in Nuremberg were just communist show trials and that we needed to worry about the Jewish communists taking over our government, and he got only so far. He was able to expose Hollywood, but when his investigation started to expose Eisenhower, he was silenced. So the beat has gone on. The communists have taken over our organs, our media organs. The poison has been pumped into our brain, and we are now on the verge of a complete takeover of our government and the world by these Jewish / communist / world leaders. And we need to fight back. We need to resist. It isn't enough for them to attack our world towers with this phony hit that we were told was done by 19 Arabs, 9 of whom are alive. We do not know who hit us. Those of us who have investigated are secure that it's Israel. And to make the humiliation more complete, after having attacked our country, they have put our harness around our military, are using our $200 billion and our soldiers to spill their blood in Iraq so that the Israelis can take all of the Middle East, which is known as Greater Israel, promised to them by the Bible, all of the land from Egypt to the Euphrates. That means everything from Egypt to Iraq. That is the plan.
Give me a little blues on the old hound dog, Mr. Uncle John.
All right. Myself.
I ain't going to work on a railroad.
I ain't going to work nowhere.
I ain't going to work on a farm.
Not me, no.
I just lay around my shack
every day
till the mail train gets back. Then I'm going to roll in my sweet baby song.
We're not attacking Palestine because it's not strategically the way to take over Greater Israel, which is all of the land between Egypt and Iraq. Egypt is on one side of this huge land mass, and Iraq is on the other side. We need to get those two boundaries nailed down, then we can work inward. That's how it's going to be done. I don't think George Bush knows about this, by the way. I think he's an innocent man. I like George Bush. I think he comes from good stock. I think he's sincere. I think he's in over his head like every other president. Nixon said his hands were tied by the Jews. We saw how Reagan reacted when the Jews stole our KH-11 satellite surveillance technology. He just threw up his hands. Nothing can be done. That's how infested we are with communists. The president is just a helpless, lower-level management guy compared to these world leaders. He just does the best he can. He comes into office, he's confused, he listens to his advisors, he does the best he can. George Bush didn't even get a chance to get oriented to this situation. So he's trusting the people around him, all of whom are Jewish neocons. He's taking orders, he's fulfilling the orders, he's doing a good job. I certainly don't want Kerry in office. Kerry is a Jew. Our problem is that we have become controlled by a foreign force. This happens. Historically, it happens. And when that happens, the problem is not to fall into the hands of your enemy. Kerry is a liar when he says he's an Irish Catholic. His genealogy proves that his grandfather and his grandmother, on his father's side, were named Kahn. They came from Austria. K-O-H-N is another spelling for Cohen, which is one of the leading Jewish tribes or houses. So the Kahns came over from Austria about 1920, became very wealthy by passing themselves off as Irish Catholics. They do a good job of putting the little dimple in their cheek and saying, I'm a cute little Irish guy just like you. They even have named John Kerry's brother, who looks like a Jew. I mean, it's absolutely, he really, really looks like a Jew. He looks like Carland, sounds. His name is Cameron. So this is how far they've gone. They've named their little they are monstrous-looking Jews, but they're trying to pass themselves off as cute, cuddly Gerber baby types. So they named their little kid Cammy Carey. You know, this is little Cammy Carey. This is little Johnny Carey. They have blue eyes and blonde hair and dimples and go to church every single week. No, they don't. They're Jews. They're ugly, distorted, strange-looking Jews. And by the way, the grandfather killed himself by shooting himself in one of Boston's poshest hotels. So they are not only Jews who have hidden their Judaism under a false persona of cute little Catholic kids, but they're so unstable that they have a suicide in the background only two degrees away from a man who wants to be president. I will vote for Bush, not for John Kerry. Ernst Zundel is not in jail in Canada for committing any crime. He has been charged with no crime. He's in jail in Canada because after 9/11, Michael Chertoff was assigned to Homeland Security here in the United States. Michael Chertoff sent some squad cars to Ernst Zundel's home where he'd been living peacefully with his wife in Virginia for about 15 years. After having won his case against the Canadian authorities, who said that publishing his book, Did 6 Million Really Die?, was a violation of their law against publishing false news. His house was burned down in Canada by the Canadian authorities because they're barbaric up there. But he saw his case through all the way to the Supreme Court in Canada, and he had the law thrown out. Having been through all that hell, he then came to the United States, which had the First Amendment, where he lived peacefully with his wife for about 15 years. Suddenly, we were attacked on 9/11. Suddenly, a Jew was put in charge of Homeland Security. And this Jew didn't like the fact that Ernst Zundel was saying, Israel has gotten control of America's government. Ernst Zundel had never got so far as to say that Israel was involved in the attack, or even that Israel was the cause of the attack because of Israel's shenanigans against the Palestinians. He didn't have time to say that, but he would have surely said that. So Michael Chertoff had him removed from the country. They cooked up a phony immigration violation that doesn't exist. They said he failed to make an immigration hearing for which he was given no notice and for which no one else has to go anyway. We don't kick people out of the country, even if they do miss immigration hearings. But in this case, there was no immigration hearing. And yet, a kangaroo court was held, and he was banished from the United States for 20 years for failing to make an immigration hearing, which had never even been scheduled. That put him in the position of being possibly extradited to Germany, which does have the hate speech law, and in which country he would stand to have to be in jail for 5 years. So he didn't want to go to Germany. Instead, he chose, when he was banished from the United States, to go to Canada. Canada would have let him run free and fight his extradition to Germany had it not been for the Jewish influence on the Canadian government, who prevailed on the Canadian authorities to put Ernst Zundel in jail with no crime being charged against him on the basis of the theory that he was a dangerous person. And that is why Ernst Zundel has been in jail in Canada in solitary confinement for over a year. There does have to be some kind of worldwide control over natural resources. We can't have, for example, some countries using up all of the water for all of the world without some ruling body saying, no, you can't steal all of the water. There does have to be some kind of a world order, but we want this new world order to be led by the superior, educated, intelligent, and kind people of the world, which means the white people of the world. What we have now is the United Nations, which is trying to impose a new world order led by the black people of the world, which is why Bush walked out of the environmental conference, or didn't even go, 3 years ago down in South Africa, because they were making it very clear that the only cool people were black people that shook their booty on stage. It wasn't a refined, elegant gathering of world leaders who were trying to decide what's the right way to distribute the world's water and air. The reason we have treaties against proliferation of nuclear weapons is primarily because of the damage these weapons do to the environment. Now the question has been raised, should we look at oil as one of the world's resources that needs to be controlled? And it's a question that should be addressed. It isn't necessarily arrogance to say that this is a resource that requires the thoughtful distribution by the world leaders. On the other hand, it doesn't seem to me that that OPEC is a cartel. It's really too large, I think, to be considered a cartel of gangsters. It's a cartel or a group of Arab countries who want to get the best market value for their product, which is oil, and a resource that doesn't renew itself, a non-renewable resource. Since oil is so vital to the workings of mankind, I would not like to see it completely used up too soon. We want to have oil for future generations, hopefully for millions of years from today, not just this generation or the next generation. So I would say that the free market is probably the best way of conserving this unrenewable resource. Therefore, I would have OPEC stay in control of the oil, and I would not strike them down as I would discipline people who were using up and polluting the world's water or air. I guess everybody knows by now that the four American civilians that were blown up in the truck and dragged through the streets, their bodies charred and burned from the firebombing of the truck, and then they were hung up in the square of, not Basra, but Jalabid or something like that. I guess you all know that we were lied to yet again, that these were not exactly civilians. They were members of a black operations group known as Blackwater that has 7 subsidiaries. They wear black pants and goggles, black goggles. They wear sort of stocking caps over their head, black leather jackets, and they go around and do things that our military can't do because we don't allow our military to commit the kind of atrocities these people commit against our so-called enemy, the people we're supposed to liberate, remember? And no, they're hardly missionaries. Blackwater trains elite troops to go into foreign countries and commit hideous atrocities. They are the assassins. They are mercenaries. They're ex-Navy SEALs and Marines, and it was these black ops guys that the Iraqis firebombed by throwing this firebomb into their truck. And then after they were dead, they dragged their bodies through the streets of whatever that city was. I want to say Jalava, but I'm not sure that's correct. And then hung up their bodies. And, you know, it's not exactly nice what they did. I'm not saying I'm happy about it, but I'm just sick of being lied to by our government and having this event was characterized to us as if these were just sweet, lily-white, gentle civilians that these hideous monsters from Fallujah, firebombed for absolutely no reason. No, it wasn't for no reason. These were the worst black operations mercenary people that in the black leather jackets with their faces all covered up except for their nose sticking out. That's who these Iraqis got, and we have a right to know that.
Thank you for listening tonight, ladies and gentlemen, to this evening's edition of The Holohoax. See you next week, same time, same station.